शान्तिः
कर्तुराज्ञया प्राप्यते फलम् कर्म किं परम् कर्म तज्जरम् कृतिमहो ददौ पतनकारणम् फलमशाश्वतम् गतिनिरोधकम् ईश्वरार्पितम् नेच्छया कृतम् चित्तशोधकम् मुक्तिसाधकम् कायवाङ्मनः कार्यमुत्तमम् पूजनं जपश्चिन्तनं क्रमात् जगत ईषदि युक्तसेवनम् अष्टमूर्तिभृद्देवपूजनं वसि उत्तमस्तवात् उच्चमन्दतः चित्तजं जप ज्ञानमुत्तमम् आजदारया श्रोतसा समम् सरलचिन्तनं विरलतः परम् भेदभावना सोऽहमित्यसौ भावनाविदा पावनीमता भावशून्यसद्भावसुस्थितिः भावनाबला भक्तिरुत्तमा हृत्स्थले मनस्वस्थता क्रिया भक्तियोगबोधाश्च निश्चितम् वायुरोदना लीयते मनः जालपक्षिव रोदसाधनम् चित्तवायवश्चिक्रियायुताः शाकयो द्वयी शक्तिमूलका लयविनाशने उभयरोदने लयगतं पुनर्भवति नो मृतम् कानबन्धना लीनमानसम् एकचिन्तना नाशमेत्यतः नष्टमानसो कृष्टयोगिनः कृत्यमस्ति किं स्वस्थितिं यतः दृश्यवारितं चित्तमात्मनः चित्त्वदर्शनं तत्त्वदर्शनम् मानसं तु किं मार्गनेकृते नैव मानसं मार्ग आर्जवात् वृत्तयस्त्वहं वृत्तिमाश्रिताः वृत्तयो मनो विद्यहं मनः अहमयं कुतो भवति चिन्वतः अयि पतद्यहं निजविचारणम् अहमिनाशवाज्यहमहन्तया स्फुरति हृत् स्वयं परमपूर्णसत् इदमहं पदा विद्यमन्वहम् अहमिलीनके प्यलय सत्रया
Tandi, your guy is flashing like something dangerous.
Yeah,
it's okay? It does?
Yeah.
That's okay. Then. It's that's how it is.
Like bright bake-off.
I am policeman. Okay. So where are we up to? We're up to here. Right? So what has happened a little bit prior to this? In fact, we've seen the most important part. So we saw, okay, about karma. It started off with the Ramana writing the words of Shiva to the rishis for the poet. And then the first part, Kartaragnaya, was about the limitations of karma and ritual. That these things, they won't operate independently. That the law of karma requires someone to operate the law. So all the laws of nature and moral laws also, they require some conscious being to put them into operation. So that's what he said. Then we had the second verse was karma was is a cause for falling into the big ocean of deeds. And then the third verse was a way to do karma so that the karma doesn't bind you. Mm-hmm. So that was the karma yoga in essence. Ishwarapitam, Nechayakritam, Chitta Shodakam, Mukti Sadakam. So the attitude of doing karma as an offering to Bhagavan, that is the karma that you are called upon to do, or any other karma that you can think of doing, you do it as an offering to Bhagavan and then take the result with equanimity. If you do it in this spirit, it is Chitta Shodakam, it is a means of purifying your mind so that your mind will have less, be less reactive when things happen, that we will take things with more equanimity. So this attitude of equanimity and handling things as they come is a sign of Chitta Shuddhi. Mm-hmm. Whereas the flying off the handle and getting elated and depressed, though it may have physiological causes, is something that we want to try to remove as far as possible. So this is Chitta Shodakam, this Karma Yoga, which is a yoga of attitude in regard to things. Let it be my offering to Ishvara. And it's Mukti Sadakam. Gradually it takes you towards liberation. Then what did he say? The best types of, there are three types of actions. There are physical actions, oral action, and there is a mental action. The best type of physical action is puja. The best type of oral action is japa. The best type of mental action is dhyanam, meditation. And each of those are respectively superior. The latter is superior to the former. That is, dhyanam is superior to japa, which is superior to puja. So best type of physical action, puja. Best type of oral action, japa. Best type of mental action, dhyanam. Uh-huh. And the internal is more superior to the external. Then among the puja, the best type of puja is what he said? Verse 5. You remember this one?
Service.
Is service. So that was interesting. Jagata Ishadi, is it Sanskrit is also interesting? Jagata Ishadi Yukta Sevanam. The Sevanam, you have to always jump. Sevanam of the world, Jagataha Sevanam. And that Sevanam is Ishadi Yuktam, is endowed with or connected with the spirit of as an offering to Ishvara. So Ishvaradi. Serving the world, which is connected with the idea that you are serving Ishvara, serving the Lord, is the pujanam of the Ashtamurti Vriddeva, is the pujanam of the God in the eight forms, and we know these eight forms now. So the first five are the five
elements,
and then we have to make up eight. Sun and moon and jivas, they say. Okay, this is the Ashtamurti Vrit, Shiva. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the Lokaseva is the best type of puja. Lokaseva with the idea that you are serving Ishvara is the best type of puja. And then among various types of oral activities, you have Kirtanam and Bhajanam, and then you have Japa, which is high and low. And eventually he got down to it, and in verse 6 he said the Japa, which is purely mental. So that sort of excludes it being oral, because he's really talking oral. But nonetheless, he says, the chittajam japa, the japa which is done mentally, is superior to the other types. Why? Because when you do mental japa, that is, you have to concentrate. And when you chant, your mind can go anywhere. A bit like driving, you know. So you know driving, and you can drive, and your mind can be all over the place, but still you are putting the indicator and turning right at the correct place. So we all know that from time to time. So it can become just a second nature. Not a good idea, but everyone experiences that from some time or another. Whereas the japa, which is done purely mentally, the mind, you know when your mind is not on the job. So japa is is a oral action. But then he said, loud is good, quieter is better, and soft is even better, and best of all is japa, which is mental. The japa, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then japa is useful also because it keeps your mind from being monkey, because it gives it something to do of the same type. So, because our thoughts jump. And so japa is a kind of a sajatiya pratyaya pravaha, sort of a flow of thoughts of the same class, of the same type. Coca-Cola, 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 Coca-Cola is a sajatiya pritya, sajatiya vritti pravaha, because you keep repeating the same thing. So it's of the same type, but it doesn't have any sacredness about it. So we take this some sacred name, name of Bhagavan. So even Ishaya Namaha, salutations to Ishvara, which you can use whether you're Christian or Kalathampian or whoever. It could be a common japa, Ishaya Namaha. Or something more initiative, whether you go down the Shiva side or you're more Vishnu or you want Gayatri japa, you can do all of those. Sometimes they say you should be initiated into a japa. But certainly for most of the simple types of japa, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, or what else?
Trayambakam,
yeah, Gayatri. Well, Gayatri is supposed to be initiated, but all these are harmless japa. Where if you take some tantrika japa, maybe you need to be properly initiated into it. Well, tantrika ones with all the kleem, shreem, gum, gum, all that kind of thing are tantrika japa. So nonetheless, the chittajam japa is best. Then the best type of dhyanam is dhyanam which doesn't have a break. That's obvious. Like the flow of oil. The best type of disposition for dhyanam in verse 8 was the disposition that soham, that myself and Ishvara are fundamentally, essentially non-different, rather than the idea of bheda. Because that is going to expand us a little bit. Because we're all born dvaitis, you know. So I told you that long story about Dayananda Swamiji used to tell it. Did I ever tell you the story about the dvaiti? I'll just distract myself again. I must have told.
Yeah
about
you
the Baba.
So we recognize it.
Okay, about once I get going, I can't. One about the Baba.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you the story. Yeah. Okay. No.
I don't know. Sorry.
Okay, so 2 minutes. Sorry. So there was an Advaiti sadhu living in a village. And at one end of the village, and there was a Dvaiti, a dualist, living in the other end of the village. And this Dvaiti, this dualist, right, he had some students. So one day, this student of the Dvaiti Pandit, he'd finished all his course of studies over 12 years, the Dvaiti. And he was graduated, and so he thought, I've studied a lot of things, and I will take on this Advaiti sadhu living in the other end of the village, and I'll finish him off. So he went there, and at that time, this Advaiti sadhu, he had long matted hair and a long beard, he'd got a barber, called the barber to come, the local barber, and the barber was shaving his head and beard. So he shaved everything off. So when they finished shaving, then the barber held up the mirror to the Advaiti sadhu to see. And then this young pandit is watching. And this Advaiti sadhu held it up and said, "You are to the barber, you are amazing. Totally amazing. You have given me back my youth. Because I can see my face and hair, everything I can see. You've given me, like, taken 25 years off. You are amazing. You must be Narayana." And so he said, "You must be Narayana." And then the Baba said, no, I am the village Baba. I'm not Narayana. I'm just the Baba." And then the Advaita Sadhu said, no, you are very humble. You must be Narayana." And he went to prostrate in front of the Baba. And the Baba was very, very nonplussed at this point and said, no, I am just the Baba." And again the Advaita Sadhu said, no, you must be Narayana. No, I am just the Baba. I'm the Baba. I'm the local Baba." So then the Advaiti sadhu said, okay, fine, and paid him and went away. Then this person is waiting there for the debate. So the Advaiti sadhu said, "I'll just go and take a bath and then I will come, because that's the custom." When he came after taking the bath, the young pandit, Advaiti pandit, had gone. Next day he came back and he said to the Advaiti sadhu, "You please teach me Advaita."
No, the Advaiti sadhu left, not the Advaiti sadhu.
No. Then the pandit the young pandit came and said to the Advaita sadhu, "You please teach me Advaita." He said, "Why you want? You are, we, I thought you would come for debate. You left, and you want me to teach you Advaita." And he said, the Dvaiti, young Dvaiti pandit said, "I studied Dvaita for 12 years with a lot of logic, a lot of Sanskrit, a lot of effort and all this. Mm-hmm. Put in a lot of effort and very sharp logic against the Advaitis. And at the end of the 12 years, I'm told that I am not Narayana." Narayana and me are different. This Baba, without any study whatsoever, it's a good story. He knows automatically that he and Narayana are different. So what is the point of studying for 12 years for something which you know just naturally that you and Narayana are different? So you should please teach me Advaita. So the Advaita is for teaching you something which you don't otherwise know. Mm-hmm. Because we are all born Dvaitis. So Shastra should come and teach us something new. Otherwise it's just confirming our ordinary understanding, and so it has no point. Because if you already know something, you don't need to go to study Upanishads and all that just to reconfirm what you already intuition is, that the world is different from you, you are different from world, and God is different from you, you are different from God, and jivas are all different from each other. This is, we didn't know this. So then the Shastra or Upanishads become pointless. So they must teach you something new. They must give you, like your eyes give you new knowledge which your ears don't give you, and your tongue gives you a new knowledge which your ears don't and your eyes don't give. So each of your senses gives you a new knowledge. They don't duplicate each other. So likewise the Upanishad should give you a new knowledge. That's the point. It's quite a, I'm sure the Dvaitis have a reply to that, but it's a fun fun. Dhyananda Swamiji told her he lengthened it out for so long. His story was quite amusing. Okay, so this Abheda Bhavana is better than Bheda Bhavana because it opens us out. Because you have to look for some expands you. Otherwise, you stay within the body sense mind complex. Now he came. Then he came to his verse 10, was it?
Nine.
Have I jumped one?
Eight.
Baba Shunya Sad Baba. Then he said, "What is best form of bhakti is to remain in the state of pure being, free from any emotional consideration at that time. Like, free from any, like in bhakti you can become very emotional." Mm-hmm. So he said, to remain in pure beingness because of the strength of your contemplation or bhavana. This is the highest bhakti, he said. It's to keep in the state of pure beingness, free from any bhava. Like you see bhava, people jump and they go for some lila, some rasa, all this kind of thing. So free from any rasa, to remain in pure beingness because of the strength of your devotion or strength of your contemplation is best bhakti. Then he came to his, I think, which I feel is his deciding verse 10, which we saw last time also. We saw all this. Hritstale manaha swastata kriya bhakti yoga bodhascha nischitam. Keeping the mind remaining the swastata. How do we say swastata? The abiding of the mind, okay? The abiding of the mind in the region of the heart is the aim of kriya yoga, bhakti yoga, yoga yoga, and bodha, and jnana yoga. So all sadhana. This is why I said it is his view, because many people will take that is not the aim of bhakti yoga, this, that. Ramana is presenting a position here. The aim of all sadhana is to abide in one's true self. So one's true self is taken as already there. You don't have to produce it. It is already existing. The mind should abide in it. Now how to get the mind to abide in the pure self which is already existing? It doesn't need to be produced. It doesn't need to be modified, it doesn't need to be cleansed, it doesn't need this, or it doesn't need that. It is already there. And the point of sadhana is to make the mind, monkey mind, to make it abide. Then he presented two ways of doing so. The first way was controlling the breath. Mm-hmm. So that is one way. Mm-hmm. And obviously it should work. So by pranayama, we can control the mind, and then the mind will remain in the heart center. Heart center is a spiritual heart, no, not the physical heart. It means the core of oneself is the heart center, the very essence of oneself. Okay, this method was not his favorite method because he said it's like keeping a bird in a cage. It will flap around after some time and get out. Mm-hmm. So it just keeps it down. And then he presented another way. Yeah? He said, which way? He called here in Tiruvannamalai kind of language, I suppose, or the language of that area, he called it Manonasha or Laya Vinashana. So Nasha means destruction in verse 13. Laya means absorption. So two ways of controlling the mind, Laya Vinashane, Ubayarodhane, Ubayavidarodhane, are two ways of controlling the mind so as to make it abide in the heart center. One way is Laya. Laya is to make it absorbed by controlling the breath. And the second way is to to destroy the mind. Okay, the mind which goes to Laya comes back again, but not the mind which is dead. So it sounds a bit fairly drastic, this Upadesha of Shiva at this point, but we should understand that by destruction he is using it in a metaphorical sense, because without a mind Ramana can't have composed this in Tamil, then have translated it from Tamil into Sanskrit, then to himself to put it into Malayalam, and then I think also into Telugu. You need more than ordinary mind to do this kind of thing. So we are talking of metaphorical, not getting a mortar and banging yourself and trying to destroy that. Right?
So he's mean brain dead?
No. Then in verse 15 he praises the yogi whose mind has been destroyed in this sense. Then he tells what is the fact of the matter and what is the abiding in the heart center. He tells in verse 16, Drishyavaritam chittam atmanaha chitvadarshanam tatvadarshanam. A chittam here mind, a mind which has been withdrawn, turned away from drishya. Drishya means anything visible. Mm-hmm. So lots of things are visible. Whole world is visible, and then your physical body is also visible, and your thoughts are also visible. No? They are mental objects. So the mind which is turned away from everything which is drishya, and then turned toward, then turned to its own essence. So the mind which is turned in upon itself, chitva darshanam, tatva darshanam. Chitva means the state of chit, the abstract sense. So chaitanya darshanam, pure consciousness darshanam. Tattva darshanam. So drishya varitam chittam, a mind which is turned away from the drishya, the visible things, the seeing of atmanaha chittvam, or the atmanaha chittva darshanam, seeing the consciousness essence of oneself, this is the tattva darshanam. So the heart is the heart center, its nature is pure consciousness, which is ever shining. And the mind doesn't recognize this. The mind thinks that it is the light, really speaking. But actually, our whole mind is illumined by it. And that one, it cannot become an object, but in its presence, everything shines. There the sun doesn't shine, the moon doesn't shine, the stars don't shine, fire doesn't shine, it shines, everything else shines, all shine because of it, in the light of that. Due to that shining, everything shines. Natatra Suryo Bhati. And that which is self-luminous is pure consciousness, because everything else needs to be established. The existence of the person sitting next to you needs to be established. The whole world needs to be established. It doesn't come and tell you, I exist. But consciousness does not need to be established. It is self-revealing and self-evident. In its presence, everything else shines, and it doesn't need to be established by the things that it establishes. So thus, everything else needs to be proved that it is. But consciousness doesn't need to be proved. You know that you are. That knowingness that you are is something which is intrinsic to you, which is self-luminous. that I am here is not self-luminous, because you turn the light out, maybe you can't see. But that you are is self-luminous. And so your self-luminosity does not need to be established. It being there, everything else is established. So chitta darshanam, even though it is not an object, seeing the consciousness which is the essence of oneself, this is the tattva darshanam, and keeping the mind in that is keeping the mind in the heart center. Mm-hmm. So keeping it, withdrawing it into pure consciousness is keeping the mind in the heart center. Then he starts off his method. His method runs for a few verses, which we're seeing. Manasam tu kim marga nai krite, naiva manasam marga arjavat. So this is the method of destroying the mind, is to look at it and see whether it is a substance or not. So it seems to be real until it is examined. Lots of things seem to be substantial until they are examined, and then we find that they are not what they seem to be. So mind seems to be a very powerful entity until it's examined. Manasam tukim, when the inquiry is done, margane krite, when the vichare krite, when the inquiry is done, manasam tukim, what is this mind? Lo and behold, you find out there is no real entity called mind. Marga arjava, this is the marga, he says, of the two paths, the control of the breath and this atmavichara. This is the path because it is straightforward. The other, it controls the mind, and the mind will go and flutter out again. This inquires into the nature of mind. Now, that is only the introduction. Then he goes a little further. In verse 18 and 19, he gets really down to the essence of his whole Upadesha Saram. How did I take this last time? Vritta yastvaham vrittim ashritaha vritta yo mano vidyaham manaha. I think I took the second line first. Vrittayo manaha, the mind consists of thoughts, or the mind is thoughts. So it is not an entity apart from, it's made up of thoughts. The vrittayaha, the various thoughts, book thought, car thought, whatever it is that you're thinking, depends upon the I thought. So that is the ego thought, I. So when we conduct an internal dialogue, the I thought also becomes something of an object. Mm-hmm. So when you are thinking, you are hurrying for your class, you think, I am late. That feeling, I am late, when you have an internal dialogue, the I itself is a mental object. I am a fool, murkoham, because you do something silly. The I thought itself is an object. So many times the first person singular, what we call the subject, is itself actually a mental object. Because if it's the self, it shouldn't become something which is prakashyam, something that is able to be illumined. It should be the prakashika. So all the different thoughts in the mind, we've got basically then two different types of operation. All the thoughts in the mind, and we have one thought to whom they, I am happy, I am sad, I am agitated, I need to go and do the shopping, I have to do this, I need to do that, I'm not doing anything now. Well, this, I will watch this movie, this Tamil movie is good, this. So I am happy, I am not happy, we define ourselves all the time. There is the I thought more or less constant, not entirely, because in deep sleep it is not there. If someone knocks you on the head, it's not there. So more or less constant, but it actually is a little unsteady, and various thoughts are in relation of a subject-object relationship to this I thought. So the I thought is the subject, all the other thoughts are object. But strictly speaking, this I thought itself is partially object. But that you need a little subtle to grasp. But if you reflect upon yourself, you can see that it is so. Okay. So vritta, mind is made up of thoughts, and the various thoughts depend upon the I thought. So understand, he says, that this I thought is the mind. So this I thought is not something other than the mind itself. So the first, you've got various thoughts in the mind, and the I thought is one other thought in the mind, subject thought. Okay, now he comes to his main point. I am aham kuto bhavati chinvataha. For one now whose mind is quiet and who inquires, from where does this I thought, I am in such a hurry, I am doing this, I am doing that, this I thought guy, from where does it come? Where does it arise from? I am aham I am kutaha bhavati. It's not, the question is not who am I, the question really strictly speaking is whence am I, from where does it arise? When you investigate, he says, you find that this I thought falls, patati, it drops for a second even. Or Shobhana says it hides. I've been thinking of hiding, you said that last time. It hides. So we say it drops. When it drops, what is left over is the pure shining consciousness. Nija vicharanam. This, he says, this is the way to manonasha. This is the way to destruction of the mind. Why? By keeping on doing this. Mm-hmm. So he said before, ekachintanat nasham eti adaha. The mind goes to destruction by thinking of the one thing. So by making this kind of a sadhana, then the mind goes what he calls manonasha. Because when you, every time it pops up, then you ask, from where does it come? And you find it doesn't have any real basis, and what is illumining it is the pure consciousness, and that is your essence, and that we try to make the mind, even though he's now said that the mind has no real substance, the point of verse 10, to make the mind abide in the heart center is the object of the exercise, and this is a sadhana in order to do that. So it's not a sadhana to produce the self, to make the self any shine any brighter, to do anything like that. I believe that it is a sadhana for making the mind abide in the heart center by inquiring into this I thought, and from whence it comes with its various dance. It drops, pure consciousness always shines invariably. I think this is his method.
So it's an aim of achieving self-realization, basically.
Yeah, in a sense, or it is more that self-realization is presupposed, and this is a sadhana, that's how I'm taking it, and this is a sadhana to allow the self to shine, not that it doesn't shine, to allow it to shine in its own way, and the mind to abide in it. Mm-hmm. So it's a sadhana for nishtha, for abiding. It's not a sadhana for self-realization in that kind of a sense. Mm-hmm. Because it's self, we're not producing anything. It's just abiding in the self, which is the heart center, which is already there. It's putting it ulta, in reverse. You take it as a sadhana for self-realization, or you can take it in a reverse way. It is a sadhana for abiding in something which is already there. You can take it either way. I take it the latter way. If you take it as a sadhana for self-realization, which is how most of the Ramana devotees will take it, then you have to be very careful. If you're wanting to go to the moon, and you set your calculations just a little bit astray, you'll miss the target by a few hundred kilometers or 1,000 kilometers. You know, even though the mathematics, you just made a small mistake. So we have to be very careful. If you take it as a sadhana for self-realization, you've got some presuppositions there. Uh-huh, that there is self has to be produced. Mm-hmm. So really, the true nature of the self, at least as far as we are all saying in this tradition, it doesn't have to be produced. It's not upadhyam, samskariyam, apyam, all sorts of things. It is as it is. The mind has to recognize it and abide in it. This is self-knowledge. Not to produce or gain. Anything that you can gain, you can lose. Anything that you can produce also might disappear over time. So it is a sadhana for abiding, for nishtha. Okay, then what did we see? That was his main verses, I think, 18, 19. That was the Ramana method. You know? So he would, Ramana would be telling something, you know, or someone would ask Ramana lots of questions because he'd be sitting quietly. And after some time, he'd put a return question: who is asking me this question? You're going on asking me about the idea of karma and all sorts of things, unanswerable things. So Ramana would fire off, who is this I who is asking me this question? The idea is this: where does it come from? Abide in your own self, investigate your own self, don't keep on spinning. So when people, Ramana's close devotees, in the evening when there was not many people there and they were sitting sort of intimately, then sometimes they would ask him to tell some story, or they said, or they would want to have some discussion, and they'd say, keep your astram away, we want to have a chat, keep your weapon away, don't ask us this question, who are you, or where does this eye come from, and all this, just keep that aside, we want to have a discussion. So sometimes they would just have a chat. Keep your astram, that's it, keep your astram. Okay, then this eye,
Beyond 20.
Ahamili, ahami nashya bhaji, ahamahantaya, spurati hrit swayam paramapurna sat. So when this I, the I thought, has gone to destruction in this way, where it has fallen down, we won't say hidden, we'll say when it has fallen down, that's fine. Then what happens? The heart center, the hrit, the core of one's being, spurati swayam, it shines of its own accord in the form of I, that is, as unbroken I. The I thought is broken. Now I am doing this, now I am doing that, this, that. So it is a mental object. The heart center is it is I, because it is oneself, and oneself is the very core of oneself. So it shines as I, as unbroken feeling of being and consciousness and the very essence of oneself. So it is a self in the so far as it is. It is an essence. But it is not the I thought which comes and goes and has its own little dance going on. So when this I thought drops, then the heart shines of its own accord as I, and it is Paramapurna Sat. It is being which has no lack or limitation. So limitation comes when we make for all sorts of divisions, because we are limited from the standpoint of body, there's only so much I can eat, and from the standpoint of my sense organs, there's only so much I can see, and from the standpoint of my hearing also, I mean my hearing is fairly acute, my hearing, but it's still limited in regard to this relation to a dog. And well, smelling in regard to a dog is very limited. And in regard to my mind, it's limited in so many ways, so many things I don't know. So limitation is all the way there along the body sense mind complex. So there's always a feeling of, you could be inferior to somebody else from the standpoint of your body. You're not as handsome or as pretty as somebody else. And from the standpoint of your senses, they're not as great, and from the standpoint of your other attributes, running, swimming, or whatever it is, cycling, mandam, in regard to somebody else. Mentally also, you may be good at a particular thing, but there's always someone better. No. But in regard to one's essence, there is no feeling of lack, there is no lack there. Paramapurna sat, in one's essential nature as being, there is no lack, whereby you feel, I am inferior to this person, not in one's essential being. The inferiority comes from a standpoint of physical body, or from the senses, or from the mind, but not from one's essence. So if one remains in one's essence, there is no sense of lack, and lack is something superimposed because of identifying with body, sense, mind. So if we find a more deeper self, a more essential self, we can transcend that sense of lack also, because it has a location. It's located in body, sense, mind only, and not in one's essence. Idam aham padabhikya manvaham aham ilinake api alaya sattaya. When this I, which I now, this I which is one's, the core of one's being, the heart, It gets the name I. It is appropriate to call it I, because when the I thought disappears at the time of deep sleep, it continuously remains. When the I disappears daily in deep sleep, it continuously remains. So that's a tricky one. You have to work out whether that's so. You can try to see whether what happens at the moment of deep sleep. So it's a bit hard, because like putting a clock and say, well, I want to work out, I want to see what time I went to sleep. So you can't really tell what time you went to sleep because you were asleep at that time. I slept at 10 o'clock. You can't exactly say to the minute or the second when you slept. So also hard to tell what happens to you in the state of deep sleep. What we say is, in the state of deep sleep, your mind gets absorbed. Where it gets absorbed is in this heart center, which is Ishvara, which is Brahman, whatever word you want to use, which is pure being, pure consciousness. It gets absorbed in there, but subliminally somehow remains, such that it comes back out in the morning, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, whatever time, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever is your time. Then it comes back out again. And that's why you come back as Venkatesha, you don't come back as Prakash, you know, or somebody else. So some sense of individual continuity, you pick up your same memories, etc. Pick up and off you go. But at the moment of deep, he says, and Vedanta, we all say this, the I thought disappears at the time of sleep. Mm-hmm. But your essence doesn't disappear at the time of sleep. It doesn't disappear during sleep. In fact, it doesn't go to sleep, and it doesn't wake up either. It's invariably there. Your true nature doesn't sleep.
But it doesn't. You said it's not awake either.
Yeah, it doesn't go to sleep, so it doesn't get awake.
It doesn't wake up
because it doesn't go to sleep. So if you go to sleep, you can wake up from sleep.
So is it too hard to say it's always awake?
Yes, well, we can say it's always awake. Metaphorically, insofar as it doesn't sleep.
Right.
Yes.
Like the sun is always...
The sun is
burning.
Always shining. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, like that. So it is illumining the waking state, the dream state, as well as the deep sleep state. So it is the seer, which itself doesn't disappear. That's a good point. So when this I thought disappears during sleep, on a daily basis, what we're talking about can be called I, because it continues all the way, and since it continues all the way, it is the real I. This is about where we were up to. I don't know whether we'll finish today. Gone through all. This more or less, the main point is over. 22. The main part of his Upadesha is over. He's going to have a few more things to say. Vigrahendriya pranaditamaha.
Vigrahendriya pranaditamaha.
Nahamekasa tajadam yasat.
Nahamekasa tajadam yasat.
Vigrahendriya pranaditamaha naham. So we'll take that, I think, pretty much with verse 21. His main teaching is over, which began in 17 to 21, and it was guided by verse 10, Hritskale Manaha, making the mind, abiding the mind in the heart center. Now he's just going to proceed along this way. Vigrahendriya pranaditamaha naham. This is a standard sort of analysis. There's nothing unusual or nothing specially Ramana in this one. Vigraha means physical body. So physical body is vigraha, like in a murti. Vigraha, what is the next one? Vigraha, indriya. Indriya means your sense organs. Prana means your vital energy system. Di means your intellect. Tamaha means a state of darkness in deep sleep, or ignorance, if you want to put ignorance. Otherwise, darkness in deep sleep. Naham, I'm not any of these things. So here there is Vedantic method of discriminating or discerning between the seer and the seen, subject and object. So anything that you can see is not the seer, and any property of the thing that you see, it's an interesting one, belongs to the seen. It doesn't belong to the seer. If you see a pink rose, then the pink belongs to the rose. It doesn't belong to the consciousness of the seer. So whatever you see is distinct from the seer, and whatever you see, the attributes of the seen belong to the seen. They don't belong to the seer. So anything that you can see is not the knower, not the subject. Therefore, this is a fairly standard Advaita way of proceeding here. Oh, anyway, vigraha means physical body. Vigraha naham, physical body I am not. Why? Because I certainly am the physical body, you know, from one standpoint. You don't go to the doctor, the doctor says, what's wrong with you? And you say, well, you know, I'm not body, nothing wrong with me. you go to the doctor, you know, so you have to deal with them at their level. There's something wrong. So at the level, you are certainly a physical body from a certain standpoint. But looking at it from the standpoint of analysis, the subject and the object are like light and darkness. And though there is a mingling between the two, it's not logically possible that light and darkness should intermingle. It's not logically possible that the object and subject should intermingle. But it's given in our experience, it happens. We say, I am the body, I am the prana, I am the senses, I am the mind, even though if you analyze, all of them are objects. The physical body is also object. You know its height, its weight, it's all sorts of dimensions. And if it's not an object for you, it's an object to the dentist and to the ophthalmologist and to the brain surgeon, whatever it is, they treat it certainly as an object. So dentist looks inside, he's just doing some drilling, you know, even things that you can't see, they see. You have an MRI scan, most of the things can be objectified. So physical body is an object. It's made up of five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, basically made up of food. The food, the modified food, the Chandogya Upanishad that you eat, that stuff in the world goes and makes up the physical body. Your body is one with the world because it is made up of the essence of food. The energy in food makes up the physical body. Then what else have we got? Indriya, the sense organs are also known or not known. So you know whether you can see well, hear well, smell well, taste well, touch well, or your nose is blocked, your ears are dull, or your eyes also are myopic or have some problem, then you can see, you can know. So your sense organs are also devatas, those are also can be objectified. Prana, how do you feel now? My stomach is rumbling, then you know samana prana, what is happening there. Or you know how your heart is, if the circulation is good or not good. Your energy level, is it good or not good? Those things, prana also, we can know. Sometimes you go and rest and you can't get up. You know, you go to rest and your limbs are so heavy you can't get up. So you know your body is needing more rest. So prana, that energy level in the body is known. Di means all thoughts, known. Anything that you think is known. In fact, you can't think something without it being known. In fact, the whole world is known. Rather boring. Everything that you do is known, or knowable. With a microscope, electron microscope, we can see something. With some telescope, you can see something else. So you can never see you can never know the knower. You can never see the seer, because everything is always seen. There's something in Kathopanishad. Bhagavan has destroyed us because he put all our senses outwards. That's why we only see external things and we can't see our true selves, because you can't go inside and see. Some rare person turning their eyes inwards, don't try it, turning their eyes inward, sees their true nature. Okay. So everything is known. So naham, naham, naham. Then what is left out? What is left out is the unobjectifiable subject, that is the true self, that is the seer, and that seer is Bhagavan. That is the Ishwara in the heart of all beings, is the pure consciousness which is illumining everything, invariably. So naham, 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 aham e, what is it said? Naham ekasat tajyadam hyasat. Naham. Aham ekasat, my nature is pure being. What is objectified or inert, I'll translate inert here, jadam, by objectified. What is objectified is asat. It's a bit tricky one. By asat, asat often means sort of one or two things. Asat means something which is totally doesn't exist. Asat. Like a rabbit's horn can be said to be asat. But sometimes we use the word asat also. We use it in different ways. Sometimes we use it for something which has just phenomenal being but doesn't have absolute being. So anything objectified is asat. It has its own transient being. So empirical being. Asat. Upon analyzing it, you find it's not substantial. So the physical body, the senses, the mind, all of these require illumination. Whereas my true nature is being, and it doesn't require any illumination. It is self-luminous, and it is being. This is my essence. I haven't done that great a job on it, but that's kind of where he's going. Next verse is a bit tricky. Sattva basika chitkva vetara.
Sattva basika chitkva vetara.
Sattaya hi chit. Chittaya hyaham.
Sattaya hi chit.
Chittaya hyaham. Tricky verse. Yeah, we can chant it or sing it again next time we meet. When we do it one by one, we lose the tune a little. Sattva basika chitkva vetara. Is there another, I'll just translate kind of loosely, is there another chit which illumines sat? Is there another consciousness which illumines being? Okay, there's a what he wants to do is say sat chit. Sat equals chit. Okay, there's no sat and chit is not something separate. Is there another consciousness which is illumines being? If there's, I'll just give something up here. If there's another consciousness which illumines being, then is that consciousness, does that consciousness have being or not? So if that consciousness doesn't have being, then it won't exist. So the consciousness which illumines being is itself being. That's what he wants to say. Is there another consciousness which illumines being? No. Sataya hi chit, chitaya hyaham. Sat, this is a bit translated loosely. Sat is chit and I am chit. It's not that there is a sat somewhere illumining being. Sat itself is consciousness. Consciousness itself is being. So being is consciousness. Consciousness is being. It's not that consciousness is illumining being. In that case, consciousness wouldn't exist. Because it wouldn't have any being of its own, because it's going to illumine being. But consciousness itself is being. So this one he wants to say is, sat chit. He's not talking ananda, but sat equals chit. Being and consciousness are one and the same thing, and in your experience, they are also one and the same thing. It's not that you know, and being is some sort of object. So things are object, but in your experience, consciousness, your knowing, and knowing that you are, so knowing your knowingness and the knowing that you are not separate. So your nature is luminosity, and that luminosity is. So isness and luminosity are one and the same thing. So your nature is consciousness, and consciousness is itself being. That's what he wants to say. It's not that they are separate things, and consciousness is illumining being. Mm-hmm. In that case, consciousness, we have to ask, whether consciousness exists or not. It itself is being. Okay, that's a difficult verse. So that was, I think, a tricky one. Then easy verse. Okay. Maybe we can say it together. Will we try?
Isha jivayor desha divida satsvabhavato vastu kevalam.
Okay, that's more or less right. Easy verse. Isha jivayor vesha divida. The difference between Ishwara and Jiva, between Ishwara the Lord and Jiva the individual soul, is due to the clothes that they wear. So the Ishwara has a certain type of clothes, you know. So his dhoti is like a very huge one, like in that Venkatachalapati. Not ordinary, you know, so many meter dhoti, but it has a huge dhoti, has big kirita. Mm-hmm. And has all sorts of other abharanam and bhushanam, etc. And Jiva comes in all rag dhoti. So the difference is between the clothes. Now what he means, the difference between Jiva and Ishwara is due to the clothes, is due to the upadhi, due to the adjuncts, due to the limiting condition, or the conditions, shall we say. So an upadhi is what makes something different. So if you have crystal and you put a red flower next to the crystal appears red. The red flower is the upadhi. It casts its own attributes onto the crystal. So what he wants to say is Jiva and Ishwara are different from the standpoint of upadhi. Ishwara is sarvajna, sarvashakti, is omniscient, omnipotent, etc. And you are alpajna and alpashakti. You are just knowing a little few couple of things. And not very powerful. Mm-hmm. So that standpoint of the from your body sense mind standpoint, you and Ishwara are different. And we Advaitis don't want to pretend otherwise. Otherwise, it's some kind of peculiar philosophy, saying that you are God, when you can't sort of lift more than 10 pounds, 20 kgs or something is about all you can manage to lift, and you want to say that you are God is a very peculiar thing. So you're not God from the standpoint of your physical body, from the standpoint of your senses, from the standpoint of your prana, from the standpoint of your mind and intellect, not God. But what we're saying is that essence inside, when you remove all the upadhi of the body, sense, mind complex, what is inside is pure being, pure consciousness. That is the oneness with the Ishwara. To make a very simple example, it's not always a happy one, but it's okay. Then the wave and the ocean, you know. So let the Ishwara be the ocean and the Jiva be the wave. But then they are both made of water. Mm-hmm. Likewise. So the ocean is ocean is ocean and wave is wave. So wave can't say, I am Pacific Ocean. But from another standpoint, they are ocean and wave are one. And from another standpoint, they are different. So it depends upon our standpoints. From the standpoint of your body, sense, mind, you are a dasa, bhakta, and all that. From the standpoint of your essence, there is. Remove the vastram, he said. Remove the vastram, I think. Satsvabhavataha, from the standpoint of being, vastu kevalam. Okay, the reality is one and the same. Satsvabhavataha, you translate that. By their essential nature as being, of sat. Vastu kevalam, they are one and the same. Vastu kevalam, the reality is just one. That's the point. Vastu means a thing, the reality. Like you say in Coca-Cola.
Cockroaches.
I say in Coca-Cola is the real thing. So vastu means thing. Here means real thing. And vastu kevalam, the reality is just one. So don't get confused. From you, you don't make anything. You just discover a few things that, because of the buddhi. But you can only discover things that already exist. You know, Newton discovered the law of gravity. When he discovered it, means what, he created it or what? No, he was just a mathematical aberration. I think he did a lot of things and then he even forgot that he did them, no? That's the thing?
Yeah.
He did all these huge calculations. And then someone, Robert Hooke, went to meet him, or someone went to meet him from Royal Society, and thought, well, I think that the movement of the planet is something elliptical or something like that. And he said, yeah, that's true. I know it's elliptical. I calculated it. It's like that. And I said, can you show us the calculations? He went looking through his papers. He couldn't find them.
This candle.
Huh?
The candle fell over.
Is it? Then maybe. But whatever, he couldn't find them. Then he had to do them again. Yeah. So the law of gravity wasn't discovered by Newton. Law of gravity exists. Then Newton worked out a ratio that it operates universally at a certain 32 feet, whatever it is, or however it works, and it's a universal law. So, human jiva doesn't do much, just discovers whatever it is, so we're not Ishvara. Remove the upadhi, like peeling the rings off the onion, and what is left over at the bottom is pure being, pure consciousness, that is Ishvara. So the Ishvara is ultimately spirit. God is ultimately spirit, God is ultimately pure consciousness, pure being. Shining in all these individual upadhis is all the various jivas, like the one sun, Hastamalaka, in all the different pots of water, shines up, reflects as all different reflections, and that is all the different jivas, but the sun is just one and the same. So, remove the clothes and the vastu kevalam. He tells that in the next verse. Veshahana, and we'll do it all together.
Veshahanataha svatma darshanam isha darshanam svatma rupataha.
Veshahanataha, when you remove your clothes, you see yourself. So you go to get in the shower, and you take off your clothes, more or less. You take off everything. Western people, they take off everything. I don't know what in India, so there you bathe with a loincloth. Anyway, Veshahanataha Swatma Darshanam, you see yourself. So likewise he says, you remove the clothes of the seeing yourself as the physical body, that's one level of clothes. Then the prana is another level, the senses, prana and mind, all different layers of clothes. I have one t-shirt, then under I have another t-shirt. So we have in winter time, the layers keep on adding layers. That's what these, how the sadhus survive, I think, in Rishikesh, in those places, because they don't wear a lot. They just keep on adding another layer. Mm-hmm. They put this cotton thing, and then another cotton thing, and then they wrap something else around, those North Indian sadhus. And thus they've got lots of layers. I don't know how they take long attention to get dressed, but lots of layers. So in any case, just to finish this point, Veshahanataha, you remove all the upadhi, body, sense, mind, through knowledge, through insight. Don't have to remove anything physically. And Swatma Darshanam, you see yourself. Isha Darshanam, Swatma Rupataha, seeing God is in the form of seeing your true nature. So we're not trying to see Krishna or Rama coming in a blue color with a bow. Mm-hmm. And if you see, I mean, it would be nice to see, but then he'll ask what you want. Then you won't be able to think what you want at that time. You'll say, oh, I want a new DVD. And he'll go away. Trivial thing that you ask for. And then he's gone. So seeing the Ishvara, Swatma Rupataha, is seeing one's true nature, is seeing Ishvara. This seeing Ishvara is in the form of seeing one's own essence, is the Ishvara Darshana. Will I finish here? Yeah? Okay. So I'll just finish it off when we come back next time. By which time you'll have forgotten what happened in the first verse. Okay. So, next time. I like the last verse, is really. Somehow it's, I like this. The last verse is nice. Sums it up in the last verse. Okay, next time we will. On the 31st, we'll finish this off and then we'll take up something. Yes, Shankar.
I just wanted to ask about, since you brought up the sadhus and the coal, like I just wanted to bring up the Nagababas in, like, in the Himalayas.
Ah.
Prakash and I were talking about this once. They don't feel the cold apparently.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I think it's because of all the yogic practices.
Yeah, must be the yogic practices.
Yeah, because some of them are just up there in loincloths.
I saw once people who are not yogi, or I didn't think they were yogis because they didn't have any yogic look about them, walking unconcernedly through snow in bare feet in the Himalayas. I was also walking through snow in bare feet because I was wearing chappals. But it was a big difference. That person was just walking. And I forgot that it might snow. I mean, maybe you get used to certain things. Yeah, it must be something with yogic heat and power. Okay, let us do our Saraswati puja because it is Saraswati time.
Everyone wants to put their books there.
Yeah, what books will we put?
What about
Okay, whatever you want to put.